Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Well, the big news this week, as we are just days away from the Thanksgiving holiday and people wanting to travel for the first time. For many, this is actually going to be the first time that they travel, because last year they stayed home and did the FaceTime Thanksgiving. It's interesting, but AAA put out a report, and it's spreading like wildfire, that we're going to be up 13% from last year's traveling trends for the Thanksgiving holiday. And what better timing than Fran Mako to be here this morning to talk about it. Fran, it's a big jump from last year. Very big jump.
Yes, it is. And folks are hoping that Thanksgiving is going to create momentum for the travel industry. You know, as most folks know, travel has taken a hit on the chin and has really suffered over the last, I'd say, 5 years, but even more during the pandemic. And now this bodes well for the industry. We're really hoping that travel picks up in 2022. And right now, the National Office usually does holiday surveys, and this time around, they're predicting about 53 million folks are traveling. We're about a smidge, 5% under the pre-pandemic levels.
Wow.
So it's coming back. We're rebounding, and it's going to look good, but maybe different.
Yeah, definitely maybe different, because I remember this time last year, Fran, we were talking about the Great American Road Trip. That was really the way to go. And
yeah,
that's still basically the way it's going to go this year. The majority of people are going to be on the roads. But interestingly enough, we're going to see 8% of people getting on a plane, and we're going to actually see the remainder getting on boats and trains and other modes of transportation, which is funny to see, because you think, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But when you see that's over 260% of a bump from last year.
Yeah.
At first, you're like, there were no cruise lines.
The cruise industry really took a hit, and it's slowly coming back now.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly. You know, in AAA's, in our travel industry, we sell a lot of cruises. So we're really hoping that this rebounds for 2022. But still, like you said, the road trip is the way to go. 90% of those overall travelers will be traveling to 50 miles or more. And that's a lot of people. That's almost 48 million people on the road throughout the nation. But again, if you have kids, it's the easiest way to travel. You can stop and start when you want to. It's still, even though gas prices are high, it's still a lot cheaper in many ways than flying if you have a family of four, and I want to say, and you're going to Disneyland or Disney World like you do.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just something that people are looking forward to, and I think it's because, one, people are really tired of staying home, staying out and about.
Mm-hmm.
But even more important, it's Thanksgiving has always been known as a holiday for family and friends, even more than Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's traditional for folks to spend time with loved ones. That's one of the driving factors. I think it's the biggest driving factor, although people at work disagree with me. They think it's the pent-up desire. I think it's tradition that prompts people to meet with their family to break bread, so to speak.
Well, and I think too, Fran, granted, you know, Christmas is obviously probably has a master audience, but I mean, we have a lot of different holidays celebrated in December. You've got Hanukkah, you've got Kwanzaa, you've got Christmas, you've got some people who, you know, that's the other thing too, is sometimes the winter blues kind of kick in and people just stay home. Whereas Thanksgiving is still, you know, that's everybody basically celebrates Thanksgiving, and it's still at a time where you feel safe. Like, I know, for example, traveling for Christmas or New Year's was always a toss-up for our family because of snow. Like, I'm not going to spend the money to get on a plane or plan to go anywhere, because I don't know if we're going to get canceled. And so, but Thanksgiving's a more surefire thing, I think, for most of the country. So I think it's also just logical that people get together for Thanksgiving. Maybe I'm crazy. Who knows?
No, I agree. The other thing, too, is you know, even though COVID guidelines are still in place and you certainly do have to comply when you're crossing state borders, the U.S. just, I think it was Monday, just opened domestic and international borders. So there's a lot more opportunity if you want to go to Europe or Canada. All these options are opening up as long as people still comply with the health and safety guidelines of the country or state that they're visiting. So it's looking up for us.
Interesting. Fran Mako is here of AAA. We were just chatting about travel trends for Thanksgiving, but I also wanted to talk about sort of travel trends after big things happen throughout the year. When I say big things, I mean, for some reason, Fran, when we get the first snowfall, everyone forgets how to drive. For some reason, when we change seasons, this sort of happens. And apparently, we have this issue of potential danger, especially for pedestrians, when the clocks go back, because we're just not used to it being dark at 4:30 in the afternoon. What are you finding at AAA?
I'm sure most folks have seen, you know, in the media, on the radio, there's been a spate of pedestrian injuries and fatalities on our roadways. Now, this has been typical nearly all year because people just drive too fast. But we decided that we analyzed some information from the UConn Crash Data Repository to see the number of pedestrian crashes before daylight saving time ended, and then, four weeks after compared to 4 weeks before. And we found there was a 113% increase in pedestrian-related crashes, especially at the 5 p.m. hour. In fact, it's more than doubled. The number has more than doubled based on 2020's figures.
Wow.
So people have to understand, drivers and pedestrians have to understand that with the time change comes greater risks. And unfortunately, drivers still drive too fast. And a lot of pedestrians don't realize they should be walking against traffic. They should be wearing reflective gear or carrying flashlights. And unfortunately, even though drivers are getting the extra hour of sleep, that time change affects our internal body clocks, and it affects different people different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So concentration, attention, decision-making may all be altered. Mm-hmm. So it's important that drivers and pedestrians make adjustments during this time of year.
Yeah, no question. So Fran, you know, what are some of the things that we should be more aware? And when I say this again, I know it's something that we go through every year. But for example, I was just having this conversation with my mom earlier this week because she's on a schedule of when she goes walking, for example. And I know we always look at the drivers who, you're right, some go way too fast. Some do, you know, are the ones causing harm. But at the same time, I think, you know, there are also some ways that we can prevent this by, for example, you know, pedestrians, I can't tell you how many times I see them and there's no reflective gear.
That's right.
It's hard to see them. They're not standing on the sides of the road. They walk the middle of the streets in their neighborhoods because
That's
they don't
right.
think people will whip around. And again, I'm not choosing one side over another, but let's talk about the other side. What are some things that pedestrians could be doing? Like, is it worth saying, hey, you know what, that 4 o'clock in the afternoon walk, maybe I make that a lunchtime walk instead, just to be safer and be seen? Or maybe I go out and I invest in highlighted gear or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we have a saying in the traffic safety industry, see and be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for pedestrians and drivers. If you're a walker, you may want to adjust your hours. I mean, I call it the twilight zone where it's dusk and it's starting to become darker. But you really need, drivers really need to see you. Carry a flashlight. Wear the, you know, the safety vests if you can. At least wear white.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do that, if you don't have any reflective gear.
Right.
And walk against traffic. Cross at corners, not at mid-block. And now, if your audience doesn't realize that there is a new pedestrian law, if a person is at a crosswalk and signals to the driver that their intention is to cross, the driver has to stop, mm-hmm. but the person has to signal now with their hand or actually raise their hand and say, stop. I don't know if you folks have seen the PSAs on TV about this. So that's just one way, the state is trying to protect pedestrians and reduce the number of injuries and fatalities. But on the other hand, if you're a driver, you need to adjust your speed to compensate for low light conditions. You're certainly not going to go as fast on back roads as you do on the highway,
right.
even though a lot of people do. But you need, if it's dusky, you need to slow down because there could be deer. Deer is another issue.
Yeah, no kidding.
At this time of year. And just make sure your vehicle headlights and taillights and signal lights are all working properly. In fact, you may want to get your headlights checked. And this is, get them upgraded, get them cleaned, because dark conditions make it harder to see when you're driving, and lack of visibility can make it unsafe for you.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Well, Fran, any other tips that people want to find? Do you guys have a website, any way that people can learn more from AAA?
Sure. You can go on AAA.com and link. When you get to the page, the home page, they're going to ask you to put your zip in. So it'll bring you to our club, and look for the news and safety link on the top menu bar.
Okay, simple enough.
And we will have information there.
Okay. Well, Fran, I really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Very good, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Fran.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
So before we get to Julius Dudix, I wanted to throw some numbers at you, wondering maybe why we're talking about this morning. According to Addiction Center, which has some of the most up-to-date statistics on alcohol and drug addiction in the country, almost 21 million Americans have at least one addiction, yet only 10% of them will go and get treatment. For alcohol specifically, every year worldwide, alcohol is the cause of 5% of deaths. That's one in every 20 people. About 300 million people throughout the world have an alcohol use disorder. And unfortunately, we saw those numbers tick up more during the pandemic. And if many of you may not know, Julius Dudix has a very incredible background in helping those who struggle with addiction. So I was glad he brought up this topic to talk about this morning. Good morning, Julius. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's a very significant topic for so many people, because the bottom line is, you said it very well, statistically, only 10% of Americans dealing with addiction really receive treatment. That means 9 out of 10 people who have addiction are walking around with the addiction, 90%. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be that way. It just doesn't. And there's hope, and there's so many good facilities in Connecticut. But the issue is to really sit back and say, what am I doing with my life? About, Melissa, 40 years ago, I wrestled with addiction. And just 40 years ago, that's a long time.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's amazing. 40, wow.
40 years ago. But I could have lived 40 years of my life in an addictive state, but I chose to get help. And now I'm helping people with the same types of issues that I wrestled with. And there's so many people can be addicted to alcohol and be in denial or be in shifting, blaming, rationalizing just because you want that drink. And it has so much power and control over so many in our country.
I'm curious, Julius, why don't people go to get help? Is it a pride thing, or what is it?
Yeah, that's a great, because you get so used to it, that the brain gets used to the dopamines, which basically the principle of tolerance kicks in. I need more and more and more of it. And all of a sudden your brain's hijacked. And really, that's literally what happens, is the hippocampus in your brain, the pleasure seeking center, is hijacked. And you can't think rationally. That's why you need a good network of people to say, hey, are you really enjoying your life? are you really being the best version of yourself that you could be? Because alcohol will hijack the brain and just take it away from you. Mm. So it's just such a it's a difficult concept for many to understand, because you get used to that prison of being in that same old routine, and before you know it, 5 years goes by, and 10 years goes by, and 15 years goes by, and you look back on your life and you say, "What have I done?" Mm. That's why I'm so glad that I chose to get help 40 years ago, and I've been able to successfully, by God's grace, help other people, and that's such a good thing. So
Julius,
your story can help so many others.
How did you come to a point where you knew you needed to get help? What forced you to get help?
Quality of life I was living, the secrets keep you sick kind of a thing. It's that what do you really want out of life kind of thing, and the idea is that you don't want anything to control you. You want to control it. Drinking's not bad, but for so many, they try to rationalize, they try to shift, they try to blame their behavior because they're so used to their behavior, and it just becomes that ingrained pattern of life that keeps you in that prison. But there's hope. So if you got changes in your mood, changes in appetite, continuing despite negative consequences, engaging in risky behavior, that denial, feeling preoccupied. A lot of times in an addictive state, you're always thinking about, 5 o'clock, I can get that first drink. Or, I can hardly wait till 7 o'clock at night, I can have that first glass of wine. And again, drinking is not bad, but drinking to excess, when it controls you and it begins to devastate relationships and devastate your own life, that's when you need to take a stop and say, hey, I need to get some help. Because there are so many, many good organizations out there that can help.
Julius, I'm curious, what about the functioning alcoholics, the ones who feel that they get to work, they do their jobs, they're par for the course, essentially, but they're functioning alcoholics, so they don't think they have a problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really, really good question, because there are so many people. It depends on where that line is and what is a functioning alcoholic and how many is too many. I'm treating people right now that they're trying to cut back from 3 or 4 glasses of wine just to 1, because they're just trying to gain control of that area of their life, and they don't feel good in the morning when they have 4 or 5 glasses of wine. So the issue is, can you get up and get out of bed? Can you get to work on time? Is it affecting the relationships you have with your children, with your spouse or significant other? Where is that functioning alcoholic is something that is really difficult for everybody to determine. And you've got to kind of do some soul searching and say, is the alcohol helping me be the best version of me, or is it really taking away from what I could be in terms of my best?
Julius Dudix, I know you have, as I mentioned, you have a personal tie to this. You've also helped so many people in this area. If somebody wants to reach out to you, they want your help on this, or they want to just get some kind of direction, how can they find you?
Yeah, they can make an appointment at 203-243-7714, or read about me on Facebook or LinkedIn or the BARK, B-A-R-K website. But the other issue is really what has to happen is you got to really want to change. You've got to take a step back and say, I acknowledge the fact that, maybe I am drinking too much. And then you've got to get that network going, the routine going, the accountability. You got to replace, not resist the desire to drink, find some other hobbies. But there's hope. Melissa, yeah. There's hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julius, we appreciate you giving us that hope this morning and taking the time to talk about this. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Have a good day, Melissa.
You too. Let's head into Ansonia this morning, where we check in with Mayor David Cassetti. Mayor Cassetti, it's been a hot minute. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, been real busy. Just coming off a great win in our election for the team. I'm looking forward to the next 2 years of this administration so we can move Ansonia forward.
So what do you mean by that, Mayor Cassetti? I know when you came on months ago, you were hoping it'd be Republican across the board. Did that happen?
That exactly happened, Melissa. We won in a landslide. All our aldermen are in. There's 14 of them on the Board of Aldermen. Our Board of Education, all of them are in. Our sheriffs, they're all in. And we're looking forward to the next 2 years. so we could move this city forward. So it was a landslide, 97% of the vote we got. And, you know, that's amazing because of all the surrounding communities, which are Republican, Ansonia is predominantly Democratic.
And really?
Yeah, we are outnumbered, Melissa, by 7-1 ratio.
I didn't know that.
Democrats and Republican. And we've won in 5 landslides since I took office. Only because we are producing, we are getting things done. You know, economic development is booming. Our apartments are ready to go online. I met with the state delegation and the federal delegation and Governor Lamont yesterday at the Ansonia train station. I guess we're going to be getting $6 billion from that infrastructure bill. And I've asked for to revamp our train systems. I've been working closely with Mayor O'Leary in Waterbury about fixing the main line of the Metro North and also get a new train station for Ansonia because it's an old platform, maybe 80 years old. It needs to be changed. So hopefully this is all going to come to head.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, before the election, Mayor Cassetti, I had Mayor Zekin on in Derby.
Right.
And we were talking about the merge with Derby and with Ansonia for the senior center. And Mayor Zekin
right.
said, you know, I'm on board with it, but our board of aldermen are kind of like dragging their feet essentially on it. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Like I'm not sure. I haven't really heard from any of the aldermen in Derby, but I just wasn't sure if you bought that, you know, it's, because I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor Cassetti. If the roles were reversed, say Derby was making this huge merger deal to you guys and said, hey, you know what, Ansonia, why don't you guys come on in? It's going to be more cost effective. It's a bigger center, so on and so forth. I mean, do you have the power essentially to override your alderman or no?
Well, I do have the power to override. It is a veto, called a veto, as we all know.
Right.
And you got to have two thirds of the majority of the board that vote in favor for you. And I feel that if the shoe was on the other foot, we would wholeheartedly move with Derby. We would do that. We share a lot of services with Derby, the pumps, the salt shed, a few other things. And I told my staff, I said, the bottom line is this. If Derby doesn't come in with us, which would be the monumental mistake on the part of Derby not to come with us, I am cutting everything out with Derby. I am taking away the fuel. I am taking away the salt shed. I'm taking everything away from them. They're not
going
to have them used.
Wow.
Absolutely. Come on. This is monumental. The city of Derby, the people of Derby need to merge with Ansonia and the senior center. This is something that I've been pushing for years about regionalization, whether it's the school system, the police department, the public works, the senior center. This needs to happen. I'm telling you, if Derby doesn't do this, honest to God, Melissa, they are looking at 50-60 mil rate in their town in the next 5 to 10 years. They're going nowhere, and they need to merge with us. And the Board of Aldermen members, now there's some new members, need to get off their keisters and get this done. And I want it done before the end of the year. I've already got the bids in for the senior center. I'm ready to award it, and it'll probably take 3 to 4 months to renovate, and then we'll get them people in.
Oh, those are fighting words. That's a lot of passion.
Come on.
Yeah.
Enough is enough. Let's throw the politics aside. Let's get to the side. I'm a businessman. You know, I'm not a politician. I never claimed to be one. I'm a businessman. I believe in getting things done. Do things for the people and get it done.
Now, Mayor Cassetti, the police, though, they have moved into the new Main Street building, correct?
That's correct. They've moved in. And on the 24th of November, I am having the public have a viewing of the new police station. I'm getting ready with the set of time, maybe 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the afternoon for the public to come to show them the entire police station in the building.
That's very exciting. We're talking to Mayor David Cassetti here on WICC, of course, Mayor of Ansonia. Anything else that's on your radar, Mayor Cassetti? I know we've been following a number of projects in Ansonia. Anything else that's on your radar?
Well, DEP is finishing up and EPA is finishing up the remediation of the SHW building where we got the funding. And I'm hoping in the next 2 months to start demolition, which will require us to shut down a portion of North Main Street for the demolition of that building. So I'm hoping that's going to happen. Our new apartments will be going online. The top floor of the new apartments will be going online. They're finishing up. There's 120 units ready, and I'm hoping to get them filled.
Well, I think that's really exciting. And Mayor Cassetti, we appreciate having you on this morning. Do you know, just to kind of circle back really quickly, do you know if there are any future, near future meetings about the senior center? I just know I get a lot of inquiries from our listeners, as I'm sure you can imagine about it.
Well, of course, Derby's supposed to make a decision very soon. I think there's some new members of the Board of Aldermen, and I think in December they should make the decision on what they're going to do.
Okay. Now, if they don't, you guys are going to have to foot the bill, essentially, for the entire center, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And we have it, and we can. We will open up the senior. We're moving forward with it, whether they're with us or not, which would be a monumental mistake on their part.
Mm-hmm. Would you deny access to the Derby residents if they don't want to merge?
No. It's not the residents. It's the people that are elected officials. That's where the problem is. They're putting politics over doing the right thing. And that's I wouldn't be angry with the residents. I feel for them because I know most of them want this of the residents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. I know, as I mentioned, I have been in contact with Mayor Zekin, who has said on this show he wholeheartedly agrees with you. I just have to get some Board of Aldermen members to come on and tell me what's going on. So we'll see.
Exactly. But in all honesty, in my heart, I think they're going to do it. I really do. I think they're going to do it.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, Mayor Cassetti, I always appreciate you coming on the show, being super honest and transparent with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And everybody have a good day.
Thank you. You too.